currently the manager of the Digital State Archive unit at State Records. So you're probably all familiar with Cassie Finlay. She left us late last year, and I took on her role there. But I'd worked with Cassie for the previous 4 years on that first stage of the Digital State Archive project, where we had that 3 years of project funding. Last year we moved to a business as usual phase, where we've got 4 years of continuation funding to move from a project footing into just a business as usual, normal part of State Records business. So my secret agenda coming here today is to really scrutinize the digital archive and make you interested and excited about engaging with us. And if you've got projects to start, we'd love to hear from you. There's a number of new members of the Digital State Archive team that have come in today. We've got Steve DeWitt up the back, far right corner. We've got Danny Archer, the pink shirt. Daniel Gordon, tried to look innocuous and hiding. And Terry, I think, is in the back row as well. So moving into this business as usual flowing now, we've got a full team, and we're ready to really start some projects. I also put Open Government Data New South Wales on in this presentation, because as well as managing Digital State Archive, our team also manages these two properties for government. We also manage Search, which is one of State Records' catalogues to its physical collection. So we're quite a busy team. But I might just jump through quite a lot of my talk and come to that last bit, because it's probably one of the more interesting areas of what we're doing, what we will be looking to do in the future of kind of realising some of the, I hate the word synergies, but the value that we can get from the fact that the Digital State Archive is doing all of these different things, because I think you can see them all connecting together. So what I was going to talk about today, I was going to talk about the challenges of digital preservation, because I think that people have ideas about it, but I think when you kind of really come to grips with the true dimensions of the challenge, it becomes a kind of maybe even a trickier problem, but perhaps an even more interesting problem than it's often stated as. And then I was going to go into the opportunities at the end. So I'll rush through both, but I'm happy to do more on this at a later date. So in February this year, Vince Cerf. So Vince Cerf is one of the founders of the internet. He was one of the two key developers that built ARPANET, which became the internet. And he excited the digital preservation community in February, because he jumped in and got involved. And he said to a major conference of American scientists that one of the things that really troubles him as the founder of the internet is, you know, what is the legacy going to be? Having kind of established this wonderful thing, what will be left in 50 and 100 years? And Vint, his intervention is interesting, because on one hand, the digital preservation community was overjoyed that we were getting this publicity, because he was being interviewed on BBC World and it made a big splash. But on the other hand, the way he stated the problem was really a conventional one, and it really missed some of the kind of more interesting parts of the digital preservation puzzle, and it maybe framed the problem in a way that isn't all that helpful. So what he focused on was this idea of format obsolescence and quantity. So the two challenges in his view are that we're going to have this old stuff that we can no longer access because it's in maybe an old PDF version that we can't access anymore, and then we've got so much of it because everyone's making so much, and those are the two problems. But if you frame the problem in that way, then the solution you come up with tends to be a very simplistic one, and that's, oh well, let's just invent some wonderful technology that can solve obsolescence, and then let's just automate the thing, and just we can get humans out of the picture, and just, so it's a kind of solutionist approach where you think it's technology that's going to solve this for you. And actually, when we started the Digital State at State Records, when we started our project, we kind of had that same mindset. And these were the two challenges actually that we were kind of most engaged with in the first year or so. But during the course of that project, what we were doing was, as well as building our processes and adopting certain tools in order to support those processes, we also started to tackle seven pilot projects. And in dealing with these pilot projects, we realised that the real challenges of digital preservation are quite different to the ones Vint came up with. And the solutions are quite different too, I think. So one of our examples is the records of a commission of inquiry into electricity transactions. And you could view that problem in the way Vint poses it. You could just view it as, you know, a whole bunch of files, there's 35 gigs, and then a whole bunch of file formats, and that's what it's about. But it's not. If you actually look at that record-keeping system, it's much more complex than that. The challenges that we face is that it's a unique system that was just used by the Commission for its business. They designed this system around their business needs. It's a diverse system. It's got all kinds of different relationships to document. It's got specific metadata that you'll only find in that system. And the real challenge here is not about file formats. It's not about the size, because actually, you know, size isn't such a problem when we've got terabyte drives and things like that. The real challenge here is how do you move this thing? How do you take it from its context in the Commission of Inquiry, where it made sense and where people knew how to search it and how to engage with it, and how do you take that and put it on a USB stick or a hard drive and stick it in a digital state archive where it'll sit alongside potentially hundreds of other systems? And in 50, 100 years' time, is someone going to have to log into this system and try and operate in the mindset of the clerk that was working with the system? Will we be able to do federated searching across the whole digital state archive? How do we preserve all of the unique metadata in this system that we won't find in other collections? So, you know, can we have an ontology that covers that? In short, the challenges we found were about diversity, about quality, because some systems are obviously better than others, about interconnections between objects, and so how to bring a kind of system of interconnected objects into a larger system, and then this challenge around integrating that. And then a final challenge relating to what Vint was talking about is how do we get support to do this? Because people have this conception of digital archives that it's just a technological problem, so you can have simple technological systems and then it's just a matter of giving those boffins in the digital archive a drive and they'll sort it out and they'll be able to press some button somewhere that will do it all for you and automate it. So how do we build support with agencies so that they can find the support they need to engage in larger projects with us, where it involves stakeholders, where it involves perhaps cost? How do we build support for that? So another white man, this time from Belarus, Evgeny Morozov, he really kind of hits the nail on this problem. And in a book that he published last year called, subtitle, The Folly of Technological Solutionism, where he points out that actually problems are much harder normally than really the people in Silicon Valley perceive them. Because humans are involved, our systems are kind of chaotic. And because human freedom is involved, they're necessarily that way. So you can't expect to have simple technological solutions to fix everything. And I'm sure this is something that probably resonates with you all as well, because it's the same thing for the record-keeping systems that you're all managing, is that you've got this fine balance between tools and systems, but Trim and Objective isn't doing all the work for you. Because human freedom is involved, you also need processes and you need training and you need all of these other things surrounding that. And it's the same for digital archives. So how does State Records then build an approach to kind of manage this? And really we look back at record keeping and about the work that records managers do. And we also looked at project management and the work that ICT professionals do when they migrate systems across between platforms as well. Our solution to this problem has been to put process at the front rather than tools. And to say that our approach will be to have a project planning approach with a methodology to structure those projects. So this is a poster that we presented at IPRES last year. So if you want more of a taste of what we're doing, find this poster. It's on the Futureproof blog. There's a slide of links at the end of my presentation. Here's what we really do. So digital archives migration methodology has four phases. So the first thing we do isn't related to technical stuff at all. We'll just plan out a project with you. And that's just to get a sense of the scope, to find out who's going to be involved, who are the key stakeholders, and then also look at cost. What time frame do you need this done in? What costs can we both contribute towards it? And also, what value are you going to gain from doing this? Because often agencies realize a lot of value when they move legacy systems to us. When they're having to support legacy systems in their own environments, agencies are often incurring significant costs. So the project plan itself can be something you can then take to your managers and support business cases to do this work with us. And I'd encourage any of you who think, well, perhaps we're not ready to engage in a big project, you could just start a plan with us. And you might take that plan and then use that to build a case to do more work in the future. And we'd be very happy to engage with you like that. The other thing to note is that you might have much simpler things. So you might think, oh, God, a project plan is too much. I just got the minutes of this board, and I want to send that over to... And we won't force you through a kind of complicated, thoughty whole methodology for that. One of the key features of the methodology is it's scalable, so that we can just adjust our work and adjust how we work according to the needs of particular projects. So having got that plan in place, what we next do is actually plan how we're going to treat this particular set of records. So everything we do we don't have a single standard approach for everything. We'll plan an approach that's appropriate to the particular record keeping system that we're dealing with. And I'll talk about how we make that sustainable later on. And then we execute the migration, and then the final phase is closure. And this is where we identify with you what needs to happen next in terms of a decommissioning plan for the system and so on. I'm going to jump over some slides now. When I mentioned projects and I mentioned case-by-case approach, I'm sure that a light bulb went off in many of your heads about how can this be a sustainable approach? When you're talking about the quantity of digital material out there, how can you take this bespoke approach? And we're often asked this question. And our answer is, well, two things. Because we're applying rigorous project methodology, so everything we do was based originally on Prince 2, we can make each of these projects sustainable in terms of ensuring that they're going to happen, because we've identified the schedule, we've identified who the stakeholders are going to be, we've identified how it's going to be paid for, and we've got process in place for deviation, so deviations from schedule and that sort of thing. So that's one way we make it sustainable. The other thing we do is we are recyclers. We're ardent recyclers in the digital archive team, and between projects we'll learn and we'll reuse as much as we can from between projects. So we're not reinventing the wheel every time. And this means we can really make dramatic kind of savings in future projects. So the two ways we recycle are whenever we make decisions around preservation actions, such as turning a file format from this to this, we'll document that in the Pathways Registry. This is an online resource, so you can all access it and use it in order to, if you're dealing with any of these issues for your non-archival long-term records, you're welcome to use these as resources as well. For metadata, we take a similar approach. We don't exclude metadata because it doesn't fit into some kind of pre-designed vocabulary. But what we do is we analyze metadata and we try to map it to industry standard terms, and then we build a growing ontology over time, and we document that in the metadata registry. So if we have crime commission today and then we get another commission of inquiry tomorrow, we'll be reusing terms between those projects. So if you'd like to start one of these projects, we'd be very keen to hear from you. All you need to do is contact us. So if you go to the website and www.records.com/digital-archives, you'll find a contact link. Jeff challenged me. if you recall, he said, and there's real opportunities for digital archives. And I hope Richard's thinking about those. And I hope, the team is thinking about those as well. And we are. And certainly there are opportunities. And I think one of the great opportunities that our team has, and it's unique to New South Wales, really, you don't see this in other digital archives programs, is that as well as managing digital archives, we're also managing OpenGov, which I hope many of you are familiar with, but it's a place for putting your open to public publications online, and Data New South Wales, and also the Information Asset Register, which is a part of that. So the great opportunity here for us is that we've got a migration methodology that was really designed around the hard cases. It was designed with how we're going to deal with email systems and databases. But where we have easy cases, like I've got this series of council minutes, and they've been up on our website. I just want to send them over to you guys. Well, we're now offering these other channels that you can actually send your material to us. OpenGov is on the digital archives infrastructure, and we actually consider anything in OpenGov to be in the digital archive already. So if you have simple things that don't require a full project methodology, you can use OpenGov. It's a self-service platform. Similarly with Data New South Wales, we'll also be looking at exploiting that as well, so that if you've got things like spreadsheets or databases that can be shared with the public now, that you could use Data New South Wales and you'd be fulfilling your requirements with us. That's not the case at the moment for Data New South Wales, I should note. Interesting thing about both these sites is that we've built them as well, both with APIs, so that they're fully automatable. So in terms of what Vint was saying, we are moving towards automation, but because we're focusing on the really hard stuff and then automating the easy stuff, I think we're kind of finding a sweet spot. And so the exciting things in terms of API automation for both these sites is you can do things like OEH are doing at the moment with us, where they're looking at redesigning their website so that when their staff publish things to the website in terms of data sets or publications, they'll automatically be transferred to state records using those APIs, and their staff won't have to do a thing. So there are these exciting opportunities in the future for that kind of automation. There's also opportunities for state records. So I'm going to do... this is a search I did for media releases across four sites. So I searched for media releases on Data New South Wales, and lo and behold, there's a lot of RSS feeds with media releases. OpenGov, we've got 272 media releases. In the Digital State Archive, one of our pilot projects was the media releases of Christina Keneally. And then in our physical state archives collection, we've got even more media releases. And actually, they didn't used to call them media releases. They were called press releases. But we've got a number of series of those as well. So you can see this interesting thing here where, because we've got these different channels into our... then you end up with this awkward situation of the public also having four different channels. If they're interested in media releases of government, now they've got four places to search. So one of the things that we will be looking to do over the next 4 years is better integration of these properties, so that as well as having a seamless channels into us, that for the public it'll be much easier for them to search across all of these properties. And finally, now this is the call to action at the end, and this actually came from a tweet to the Data New South Wales Twitter account last night from Simon Elvery, who kind of gave us a shout out, but then he said, if I'm searching for elections, why can't I find anything on Data New South Wales at the moment? And it is unfortunate. I mean, it would be great to have more good content from government on Data New South Wales and on OpenGov. So who is Simon Elvery and why is he important? He's a data journalist at ABC Online. And one thing he did recently for Victoria, so in the recent 2014 Victorian state elections, he used their equivalent data set from their equivalent data.vic and built this beautiful journalistic piece for ABC Online that gave an interactive view of the election data. So people want this material from us, and we've got opportunities to present it, but really we all need to work together in order to ensure that we can get content up on these sites that is timely and relevant, because there is a strong demand out there and it will be used. Thank you very much.